And we're holding on page 8 in Brachos, about the middle, a bit past the middle of the page, Rav Zeira Amar. Gemara had started discussing the question. We said that David would wake up at Chatzos, or we said that another possibility is he would switch gears at Chatzos. Till then he's learning, and before that he's davening, and after that he's learning or composing Mizmor Tehillim or whatever. So we talked about how did he know exactly when Chatzos is, if even Moshe didn't. Since Moshe says Ka Chatzos Halayla, then we have to assume it means approximately midnight.
After Moshe Rabbeinu, mine says Rabbeinu midday.
Maida, yeah, the line before that. Maybe we're going to get that in a second. Reb Zeira Amar, that's where we're holding.
I'm not too much.
Yeah, you're about a line ahead of where we are. Reb Zeira Amar is where. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we had one answer that in fact David didn't know wouldn't have known exactly when it was midnight either, except that he had rigged up the harp above his bed where the north wind would start blowing and strumming on it, and that would wake him up. So now the Gemara gives a different answer. Reb Zeira Amar Moshe Rabbeinu Neida have a Yoda, or La'olam have a Yoda. In fact, Moshe perfectly well knew when Chatzos is. There's just two different Gersos. Moshe Rabbeinu Neida have a Yoda would mean Moshe certainly knew. The other Gersa, the way it's printed in the Gemara, is Moshe La'olam have a Yoda. In fact, Moshe knew when Chatzos is. The David Nami have a Yoda. David also is able to know exactly when Chatzos is. So the kivin did David have a yada kino lomali? Well, the question is then, so why does he need the kino if he knows exactly when midnight is? And the answer is, le'iture mishnase, to wake him up from his sleep. Because we had the different possibilities before of what he was doing before Chatzos and after Chatzos. We had we had Rav Zeira in fact saying that the first half of the night he would doze off here and there, he would take brief naps, and after Chatzos not. So if it happens that one of those naps is before Chatzos, then he needs the kino to wake him up. But not that otherwise he wouldn't know when Chatzos is. So the question is, Kim and Moshe have a yada, lama lo memo ka chatzos. So if Moshe knows exactly when chatzos is, then why is he using the word ka chatzos? Why not say ba chatzos? And the answer is Moshe kasabar, because Moshe figured not to say that way, shema yitu itzagnine paroi, because paroi's stargazers who are in charge of knowing exactly what time it is, they might not know what time it is, v'yemru Moshe badaihu, and they're going to say that Moshe is a liar. So in other words, it's not that Moshe doesn't know when Chatzos is, but he figures that they're not going to know when Chatzos is. They're going to think Chatzos came and the Makkah hasn't come yet, or conversely, they're going to think that it came before Chatzos, and they're going to say Moshe doesn't know what he's talking about. Which, by the way, I mean, you're going to, after 9 Makkahs that everything came true and exact in every detail, all of a sudden now the 10th one, one little detail, so it's at 11:59 instead of at 12 o'clock, and all of a sudden they're going to say Moshe Badayu. So on one level, that shows, how much people can rationalize. They're going to grab onto any possibility, and even the tiniest little thing, to rationalize the fact that all this time they've been opposing the Eishkes. So there is that, but there's also the Pnei Yeshua also talks about the idea that, after all, they were claiming earlier that Moshe was doing what he accomplishes through Kishur. Now, Chatzos is specifically, we said before, is an Eis Ratzin, and it's a time when the Mazikim don't have power because the time of Eis Ratzin of Hashem. So if the Makkah happens exactly at Chatzos, they're going to have no choice but to say that Moshe couldn't have accomplished it through magic or through Shadim, but if it happens, if they think it happened even a minute before or after, then they could still rationalize and say that maybe he did it through Shadim or something. So therefore, Moshe has to make sure that they don't think that way. This is like the expression that a Tana says. You find it in Masech Derech Eretz Zuta. Lamed l'shoin chaloyma eni yedea. Teach your tongue to say, I don't know. Never talk in certainties like this. Even Moshe is saying, Kachatzos, Shema tisbade, because you might be contradicted. V'te'oches, and then you're going to be grabbed. You're going to be, the people are going to grab you, are going to catch you in a lie. So that's another reason why he said Kachatzos, but not that he didn't actually know. Rav Ashi says a third possibility. The Pauga Uta de Tlesa Nagi Abesa have a curry. When Moshe is saying this, when he's saying Kachatzos Halayla Ani Yotze B'Seret Mitzrayim, was on midnight of the 13th of Nisan going into the 14th. So it was, to put it in terms that we would understand, it was B'dikas Chometz night. It was midnight a couple of hours after that. So Moshe is saying to the Jewish people, Hashem is saying that ka chatzos, meaning not approximately chatzos, the kaf is not the approximation kaf, it's rather the kaf, like the word like in English. Again, the word like in English can mean approximately, but it can also mean as now. So as exactly the same time that it is now, in 24 hours, Hashem is saying, I'm the Yotze B'Sef Mitzrayim, I'm going to be going forth through Mitzrayim and striking all the Bechorim. I saw a vote on this also, by the way, that, you know, when you think about it, we're used to the idea that midnight is exactly the same moment in large areas, you know, the entire eastern time zone, the entire central time zone or whatever, it's midnight at the same time. Really, of course, we know it's not like that. Clock, the sun time is going to be slightly different from one place to another. So the vote would be that in every place in Mitzrayim, it was like a wave going sweeping through Mitzrayim. In each place, as it exactly hit Chatzos, then the Bechorim in that place died. And then the next town over would be a few seconds later or earlier as Chatzos comes in that place. So that's the kind of thing. According to the previous explanation, the Itzagnine Pare wouldn't necessarily pick up on that kind of thing.
Right. What would be the problem? Let's say Moshe Rabbeinu is told to cut Chatzos and the people didn't figure it out. In other words, it was a minute later.
That's what we said. So just before you walked in, we said two possibilities. Number one is people will always grab onto anything to rationalize their false beliefs, right?
I heard you, but yeah. The fact is, a minute later, they're going to see the Makkos of the Chorus. So it's a minute later, big deal.
Nonetheless, they're still going to use that to grab on as an excuse. Look, Moshe doesn't know what he's talking about. Or, according to the Pnei Yeshua, they're going to use that. Look, you see, he's using Shadim rather than that it comes from Hashem.
Why did they really care what the Mitzrayim thought?
Because we the whole point of the Makkos is the V'yodu Mitzrayim Ki Ani Hashem. The whole point of it is that the Mitzrayim should realize once and for all that the Eved runs the world. So it's very important for them to be, it's very important for their beliefs to be broken and to be shown that they don't know what they're talking about. So they started realizing it in stages. I mean, you know, look, I mean, you know, some of them realized it enough to actually join the Jewish people. That's what the Erev Rav were. You know, as much as we always talk about how lousy the Erev Rav were and how all the trouble they caused, we got to realize they were the better element among the Mitzrayim, that they actually chose to leave Mitzrayim and join the Jewish people. They were nowhere near the caliber of the born Jews, which is why they're the ones, they couldn't reach the level of bitachon of the born Jews, which is why they're the ones who are always complaining and always starting the problems in the desert. But nonetheless, they were still the better quality Mitzrayim, the worst quality Mitzrayim. So you have within them, you know, you have the Yoreis Dvar Hashem, for example, who paid attention, let's say, during Makkos Barad and brought their animals inside, and then you have the ones who didn't. You have your, you know, you have the Chartumim began recognizing by Makkos Kinim Etzbei Lekimi. So it was a gradual thing. But now, by Makkos Bechoris, that was it. So, you know, everybody has to realize at that point that the Eved is running things and there's no possibility for anything else, which is why also the whole of Kedem Tzrayim Esh Shvatim, all the gods of Egypt, had to be broken and destroyed for the same reason.
So all the Mitzvim that died in the Yam at the last second, it means at the last second
they realize that the Eved is running things. Yeah, I mean, they themselves, you have before, you know, when they see by Yosef, as Oifan Makavosev, the Pasuk describes how the wheels of their chariots are falling off and they're getting stuck in the mud and whatever. They say, Ki Hashem Nilcham Lahem B'Mitzrayim. You know what we can see? That Hashem is fighting on behalf of the Jewish people against Mitzrayim and in Mitzrayim too. But by that time, it's too late. Yeah, they should have come to that realization a few days earlier, and then they could have been part of the Erev Rav. Yeah.
Too little, too late.
Exactly. Okay. So now, since we're talking about, David's nighttime schedule. So now let's talk about what he does during the daytime. So we said before that we learned yesterday that in the morning the Chachamim would come to visit him. They'd have the cabinet meeting for the day to discuss the agenda. But what's David doing the rest of the day? So we start off with a pasuk that David says, "LaDavid." I'm skipping a few words. Shamra nafshiki chassid ani. Guard my soul because I'm a chassid. We say this every day in davening. Well, every day that we say tachnun before shir shoyon. So why is David praising himself as a chassid? On the face of it, a person shouldn't be boasting that I'm a chassid. So what does he mean by that? What particular thing that he's doing is he focusing on that he's a chassid? Now, we know in general, David was a chassid in many ways, but what particular is there that he did that he can call himself for that a chassid? So Rav Levi and Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Levi and Rav Yitzchak argue what David was referring to. Chab Amar, one of them says, Kach Amar David Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means David is saying to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Loi Chosid Ani, am I not a Chosid? You should realize, Shekol Malchim Mizrach HaMayrav Yishenim HaGimel Shoros, all the other kings in the east and the west sleep until 3 hours into the day, like we learned before, and like we said, and like it said later on in the parak, which is why Sirk Sman Krishma is 3 hours in the day. And me, I'm getting up at midnight to praise you, like we said before. Why is he mentioning, by the way, east and west? Marisha points out, because when you go on the globe, if you go to the extreme north and the extreme south, near the north and south poles, you're not going to find any kingdoms over there. It's too cold for anybody to live there. And to the extent that anybody does live there, then they don't have kings. They have maybe like little chiefs or whatever. So therefore, Mizrach HaMairav represents the civilized world. So Marsha explains, now, the pasuk before that, before he says, Shomer Nafshe Ki Chazadani, the pasuk before it, he says, Hatei Hashem Oznecha Aneini Ki Oni Ve'evyen Oni. So he's saying, I'm poor and needy. So meaning, in other words, he's saying like this. Poor people, what do? They can't afford to sleep in until 3 hours a day. They got to get up early and then go find some work if they want to have some food. Now, I could be acting like a king. After all, I'm rich. I don't need to get up and work for a living. I could be sleeping in like they do. But instead, I act as though I was a poor person and I have to wake up early. Except in my case, it's not for a job. It's in order to praise me. So that's one. The idach and the other between Rav Levi and Rav Yitzchak says Kacham Adavu Lefnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Rebbeinu Loi Moi Chosid Ani. Am I not a Chosid? Shekol Malchim Mizrach HaMairav Yoshvim Agudes B'Chvoidam. All the other kings of East and West of the civilized world, they sit together. They sit with groups of their cabinet ministers or of their followers or whoever in their cover. Vani. Me, I don't care about my own cupboard. Yoda melochloches bedom over shvir over shuya. I get my hands dirty with blood and with a shvir and with a shuya, which both of them we learned about in Nidda not so long ago. A shvir is an embryo that's in the early stages of formation. So in the case of dam, a woman brings a shayla with blood to a rub. Is this in fact blood that makes her tummy Nidda? Or as we said, is it one of the colors or shades or whatever that's not tummy? In the case of a shvir, is this developed enough to be even be considered a baby? And if it is, is it a boy or a girl? What's the din as far as you may toma and you may tara? And a shulia is the amniotic sac, which comes out with a baby usually. And the rule is ain shulia below vlad. If there's an amniotic sac, it means there was a baby. Even if you don't find a baby, as we talk about nida, it means that the baby disintegrated in the womb or something. So then also, so people would be bringing that to David to find out, this particular thing, so let's say, so now something came out of her, does it in fact meet the criteria that halacha says, the minimum size of a shulia? So Rashi refers to a Gemara there in Nidda that describes it has a certain minimum size and it has a certain characteristic shape. And so forth. So you'd have like a mass that she expels, that she miscarries, and you need to know, is this a shulia or is this stam, you know, or a tumor or something? So a shafir is an embryo in the early stages of development. The word shafir is related to the word shveferis, because when a baby is first formed, when the early stages of formation, it's like a hollow tube, and then inside it, the various internal organs start forming, and eventually the limbs and whatever start forming as protrusions from it. So therefore, a shafir, a shvir, whatever, is an embryo in the very early stages of development, and so you need if a woman miscarries such a thing, you have a shayla. Is she tummy from a birth or not? And if it's a birth, would it have been a boy or a girl? So David is saying, I personally, I don't just delegate that to somebody else. I don't say it's beneath my dignity as king to deal with that. I personally get my hands dirty with such kinds of things. In order to make a woman tahor for her husband, if I can find a way that it won't be metame her, then I'm working on doing that. So it's not necessarily before 40 days. It's at some early point in the development of the embryo, then it's called a shock period. So shlil is actually made from the skin of an unborn animal. It's similar to the word shulia. It's not identical. I mean, the shulia itself is the amniotic sac that the baby forms inside. But yeah, it's related. The shlil is an unborn baby. Because it says, practically speaking, but it's thinner, but I think there's also the idea, because like it hasn't even been in the world yet, it hasn't, like, so to speak, been exposed to the tumor of the world yet. So yeah. So the shulia, in modern Hebrew, shulia means a placenta. In Gemara terminology, it means the amniotic sac. Now the placenta is kind of attached to that, so maybe the shulia and the Gemara include the placenta as well, but primarily it means the sac, that they're the fluids and the baby are inside, yeah. Anyway, so Marsha explains again the same kind of idea. Same idea. A poor person has to set aside any dignity that he has and work even with dirty things because he has to earn a living. Me, I'm working with dirty things not because I have to earn the living, but because I'm passing in halachas in Torah for your covered Hashem. Now, Bechlal, we have to ask, why is David, so okay, these are very nice things that David is doing, but why is it so important for him to stress to Hashem that he's a chassid? So HaKosev over here brings a long explanation. He says this Kapitel Tilim, Kapitel Pevav, he says, was written after the story of Bathsheba. And he says an interesting point. If you look at the order of Sefer Tilim, the first two Sfarim of Tilim are mostly compositions by David himself. Many of them actually have in the caption, the David. Then you come to the third Sefer of Tilim, beginning Kapitel Ein Gimel, and for the most part, that whole Sefer of Tilim is mostly compositions by Asaph or by Bnei Korach. Mizmor LaAsaph Atov Yisrael, Lamnaseach Al Tashkis LaAsaph, and so forth, Bnei Korach, and so forth. Then in the middle, stuck in over there, Kapitel Pei Vav, is a Kapitel by David. All of a sudden, the David, Elach Hashem, not Elach Hashem, whatever, the David, the Tfilah David Hat Hashem Oz Mechani. So what is that doing in the middle? What is that doing in the middle over there? So he says, because Kapitel Pei Hei talks about Tshuva, and so they're talking about when the Jewish people are in Golus, and they do Tshuva, and Hashem brings the Gola. So therefore, when Tilim was put, when David put Tilim in the order that we have it, he put in right after that a Kapitel where he himself is asking Hashem to forgive him after the story of Bathsheba, after he did Tshuva. So now he's saying, being that I'm a chassid, please judge me lefnim meshur asadim. Even though I'll be sure to say, I deserve quite a bit of punishment. And in fact, he did undergo quite a bit of punishment for it. But at least please have rachmanos on me that it shouldn't be a permanent thing. The last pasuk he says, I say, ois l'tova, for example, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that he's asking, show me a sign, even while I'm alive, that you've forgiven me for the Aveira. So that's why he's stressing, ki chosid ani, because he's using that as a basis to ask Hashem to please forgive him. Then there's another explanation as well. The Pnei Yeshua gives a very interesting explanation. When the Jewish people first asked for a king, so who was the first king? Shaul. And we know the whole story over there, how at first not everybody accepted him as king, but then there was a battle against Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon, and then everybody is willing to accept him as king. So Shmuel gathers all the people together and gives them a long speech, and most of it is after the Parshas Korach. Anyway, at the end, Shmuel finishes off his speech and says, if you do good, then wonderful. You'll be in good shape and your king will be in good shape. The im horeya toreu, he says, but if you do badly, gam atem, gam malkechem tisohu, both you and your king are going to be destroyed. So now David is concerned about that. After all, he needs to make sure that he's definitely in the best possible shape in Hashem's eye in order that that shouldn't happen. Therefore, he's asking Hashem, please realize that I'm a chassid. I'm going lefnim meshur asadin with these kinds of things. And therefore, don't let that threat that Shmuel said decide that that should have to come true.
I'm really
How do they know this? So that's the thing. So we have to, they're analyzing the psukim. So that's the thing. For example, Marsha is saying, they're analyzing, since David is saying, ki chosid v'oni oni, so we have to understand that there's something about what David is doing, some special chosidus that usually you would find only an oni. Yeah, right. And David continues. So not only am I involved with this blood and shvir and shilya, all these things that most people would consider repulsive, but I'm doing them kedei l'tayu isha l'baila v'loy oid. Not only that, David continues. Ela shekol ma she'ani oiseh ani nimlach b'ti boishes ram. Everything that I do, whenever I'm deciding a question in halacha, I always consult with my rebbe b'ti boishes. But oimer loy, and I ask him b'ti boishes. Mifiboshes Rebbe, Yofi Danti, did I judge correctly? Yofi Chiyavti, Yofi Zikisi, did I decide who's guilty and who's innocent correctly, which is by Dini Nefoshes and Dini Mominus, Rashi says. Yofi Tihauti, Yofi Timesi, did I correctly declare this Tahar or Tomei? Veloid Boshti, and I was not embarrassed to ask him. So who is Mifiboshes? So let's talk. So let's talk about like this. The name Mephibosheth and various names that have Boshes in them ran in Shaul's family. So you have as follows. Shaul himself had three sons who were killed with him in his last battle at Har HaGeboya. Then he had a fourth son named Ishbosheth, who afterwards was a rival king to David for 2.5 years. That Ishbosheth is also called in a different pasuk Eshbaal. Then you have David, then you had Shaul, in addition, had some sons with a Pelegesh by the name of Ritzvah Basaya. One of those sons was named Mephibosheth. Later on, you have, at the end of Sefer Shmuel, you have the story with the Givonim, where they were angry at Shaul, and they had to be appeased, and David ended up having to give them seven of Shaul's children or grandchildren, and allow them to execute them. So one possibility is that Mephibosheth we're talking about over here is that one, is Shaul's son. The other possibility is that we also have, now Yonasan, David's friend, had a son named Mephibosheth, and later on, you find in Sefer Shmuel, where David is asking, he wants to find the descendant of Yonasan and do good with him, and he ends up inviting him to the palace, and he's going to be a constant guest at his table, and his name was also Mephibosheth. So which Mephibosheth we're talking about over here, different Mephoshim disagree. On the one hand, the one who was the son of Yonasan, on the face of it, like you said, it's going to be a while before David even gets a hold of him, and he's much younger than David. How is he David's Rebbe? On the other hand, the one who was Shaul's son from his Pilegish, for one thing, he ended up being killed by the Givonim. Now, fine, that was towards the end of David's reign, but you have to ask them in that case, why didn't David try to protect him? We find that it says that Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, David davened for him that he shouldn't end up being one of the seven that are picked. If the Mephibosheth, who was the son of Shaul, was his Rebbe, on the face of it, he should have done the same thing. So you have a good deal of discussion. And you have also, it also depends on different gusois that we're going to say over here in the Gemara in a second, of that he had another name. So yeah.
I didn't answer. It said before that he asked Mephibosheth every time, and on any halacha that he did, is this okay?
Right.
But Mephibosheth didn't share the blood with him.
Says who? Maybe Mephibosheth was there at the time. Or David is reporting to him afterwards, you know, somebody brought me this and this. He describes it to him. Did I judge it correctly? But again, we're not just talking about as far as Shvir and Shulia and whatever. David is saying everything that I judge. When I judged a case in Dinei Momonos, I would consult with Mephibosheth and ask him whether I did right. If he asks before, then fine. Maybe Mephibosheth wasn't always available to ask before. But he's saying even after the fact, I would ask. And if it turns out that I was wrong, he says, "Beloy boshti, I wasn't embarrassed." Even if Mephibosheth points out to me afterwards, you know what? You didn't know what you were talking about. Which, by the way, there's an interesting point over here. Rashi uses the expression "shepa'amim hoya toya va'oyma loy to'isa," that sometimes he would make a mistake and he would tell him, "You made a mistake." Now, who's the he made a mistake? On the face of it, it means sometimes David would make a mistake, and Mephibosheth would correct him and say, you know what, you made a mistake. On the other hand, Eitz Yosef here brings a very interesting point from the Smichus Chachamim. He says, we have a Gemara elsewhere that says that David had the special quality, that David had special tziyata d'shmaya, which Shaul did not, to always come to the right answer in halacha. So how is it then that he would be making a mistake and Mephibosheth would be correcting him? So rather, says the Smichus Chachamim, what it means is, when Rashi says, Hoya Toya, means sometimes Mephibosheth would be mistaken. He would be correcting David, where it turns out that his correction itself is mistaken. Nevertheless, David says, I still accepted the correction, and I would be machmir if I knew that Mephibosheth holds differently, than to be on the safe side, I would be machmir if I know that he holds differently, even though it might be that he's not correct after all.
Why is he
happy?
Because he's so bitter?
Because he had bitter. That's what we're saying. Yes. So, Amar Avishua Breder of Micro. Where's a pasuk that we see that David acted that way? You have another pasuk in Kapitel Kofir Test. Ba'adabra be'edes secha. David says, I speak about your testimonies, about the Torah, negin malachim, in front of kings, beloy evosh, and I'm not embarrassed. Now, kings can mean, first of all, Tamar Chachamim, man malfi rabbanon. Second of all, it can mean specifically Mephibosheth was a Tamar Chacham, so therefore, yeah. Or the other possibility is it can mean Malachim, because Mephibosheth was actually from a royal family. His father or grandfather was Shaul, after all. So therefore, so he can be described as Negin Malachim. The Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Loi Mephibosheth Shmoi. His real name was not Mephibosheth, Ela Ishbosheth Shmoi. His real name was Ishbosheth. Now here you have a problem, which is that Ishbosheth that we know of in the Psukim, who was a son of Shaul, who was a rival king for 2.5 years during David's reign, but he was killed very early in David's reign. Eventually, the pasuk describes how at one point two of his officers sneaked into the house while he was napping and they assassinated him. So how is he available for years after that, throughout David's reign, for David to be learning from him? So there are Rishonim who have the Girsa over here, and Marsha brings it over here, that the Mesiboshes we're talking about over here is not Ish Boshes. The Gemara should not be saying Ish Boshes Shmoy, rather it should be saying Meriv Baal Shmoy. The one, Mesiboshes, the son of Yonason, who David invited to the palace and made him a guest at his table and so forth, in Divrei Hayamim, it names him instead. In Divrei Hayamim, when it tells about the descendants of Shaul, it instead calls him Meriv Baal. So therefore, maybe the correct Gersa over here should be Ella Meriv Baal Shmo, that his real name is Meriv Baal, and then the Gemara is going to explain why his nickname is Mephibosheth. Another possibility that Rishonim bring is maybe the correct Gersa is supposed to be Ella Esh Baal Shmo. And you find that it mentions in Zivra Yomim also, it mentions the son of Shaul named Esh Baal, and that could be the same as the Mephibosheth who later on was killed by the Givotim. So you have different possibilities which Mephibosheth it is. Anyway, so Valoman Nikra Shmoy Mephibosheth, so why is he called that? Show you Mevayish Pnei David Bahalofa. The word Mephibosheth is a short from Mevayish Pnei. He would humiliate David's face in Halacha. In other words, because David would have decided something in Halacha, or think to be deciding something in Halacha, and Mephibosheth would tell him, you're wrong. So David was embarrassed by that, realizing that he had forgotten some key point or whatever. So, Lefichach, so because of that, because David was willing to accept such humiliation and allow that he's going to listen to what Mephibosheth says, Zocha David b'yotzim men of Kilov. David himself ended up having this twist that he had a son named Kilov, and what's so special about Kilov? So, V'omer, I have Reish Yud in front of me, I don't know what it expands to, Rav Yochanan, Rav Yossi, Rav Yonason, okay. Loy Kilov Shmoy, his real name was not Kilov, Ella Daniel Shmoy. His real name was Daniel. And we know that because there are a few places in Tanakh where it lists the first few sons of David. So there's one place in Sefer Shmuel where it lists them, it says the oldest was Amnon and the second one was Kilov. Then in Divrei Hayamim it gives the same list, but instead of the second one being named Kilov, instead the second one is named Daniel. So we understand that his real name was Daniel. The Loma Nikoshma Kilov, so why is he nicknamed Kilov? Show you Machlin Pnei Mephibosheth Bahalacha. Because he in turn would embarrass Mephibosheth's face in Halacha. In other words, he would be able to defend David's position and show that after all, David was right and Mephibosheth is wrong. So therefore he's called Kilov, Meloshin Machlin, and Og. Because the word Og can mean, that, so Rashi explains that it means that the Rav, Mephibosheth, is like an Ob, he's like a father, and he's Machlim, he's embarrassing him by showing that after all, David's position was right, and Mephibosheth is not. Marsha says that actually it could be that why does he end up having the ability to humiliate Mephibosheth in discussions? Because Mephibosheth in turn had previously humiliated his father. So we're not talking revenge, of course, but we're talking about, in other words, that Kilov was an outstanding Talmid Chacham who had the ability to defend David's position and show how, after all, David was right in matters of Halacha. So his nickname because of that was Kilov. By the way, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, this Kilov is one of only four people in history where the only reason he passed away is because of the Chet Tadas, the Etzir Shalmachosh. But other than that, he had no Averis of his own. So David had this chus to have a son of such a caliber because earlier when Mephibosheth was discussing things with him, he was willing to bow to Mephibosheth's knowledge, even though, again, as we said from the Eitz Yosef and the Smichas HaChamim, maybe in fact David after all was right because he had Siyat Shmaya, but because on the face of it, Mephibosheth's proofs were stronger, therefore David would go along with it to be Machmir, to be on the safe side, and therefore he had this chus to have such an outstanding son. So Kilov stands for Machlim Ov. Machlim means he embarrasses. Ov means the father. So Rashi says the father means Mephibosheth because a Rebbe is like a person's ruchniyistic father. And Marsha says it means he embarrasses in order to defend his own father, David. The Olav Amos Shloima b'Chochmasay. Shloima referred to somebody like Kilov in his Chochma in Sefer Mishlei, where he has Pesukim. He says Bni im Chocham Libecha. He says my son. So he's writing over there as if like in David's voice and speaking to Kilov. My son im Chocham Libecha. If your heart has become wise, Yismach Libi Gam Oni. My heart will also be happy. In other words, I can be happy over the fact that you've managed to win out over Mephibosheth. I am happy because to begin with, I thought that he had the right opinion in Halacha, and it turns out that you showed how, after all, I had the right one. And another pasuk, Va'omer, another pasuk in Mishlei says, Chacham bni v'samach libi, my son is wise, my heart is happy. va'ashiva chofi dover, and I am able to respond with words back to those who would mock me. Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says that because of you, because Kilav, because you're by my side and you're able to bring solid proofs for what I said, therefore, when we have Mephibosheth, my Rebbe, who was humiliating me and was mocking me and saying that I don't know what I'm talking about in Halacha, I'm able to respond to him and show him that, after all, my opinions are very solidly based in Torah. So the Gemara continues. The David hate, in worth mentioning in this connection about this Mephibosheth, if it's Mephibosheth ben Yohanan, you have an interesting thing in the Pesukim over there. So you have, how does David first find Mephibosheth? So the Pesukim describe there in Shmuel Beis, Perek Tes, that David is asking, is there anybody left from Yohanan's descendants? I had a covenant of friendship with him. I want to continue that with his descendants. There's a man named Siva, who's a slave of Shaul's family. So he reports to David that, yes, there is a son of Yonasan named Mephibosheth, Bil Loy Devor. Now, on the face of it, Loy Devor is the name of a city in Aver HaYavin. So he's telling him that's where he's located. And then the Pasuk says that David calls from Mephibosheth and brings him Mi Loy Devor. So again, on the face of it, it means Siva tells him this is where he's living, and David brings him from there. But there's a medrash actually that explains that the word is, the word Loy Devor also means no word. So it means Siva is saying Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth. He's claiming Mephibosheth has Loy Dover. He has no words. He's an Amoritz. So what do you need him for? David brings him and he finds that's wrong. Mi Loy Dover. He finds from being thought that he's Loy Dover, it turns out, in fact, that he's a tremendous Talmid Chacham. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'David heichi kari l'nafshei chassid." Now, how can David be calling himself a chassid in the first place? Fine, we said before the various reasons why he's doing that, but still, shouldn't he be? Don't we see a different pasuk where David is concerned that maybe he doesn't have chassid in Hashem's eyes at all? V'haksiv lulei hamanti ludes b'tuv Hashem be'eretz Chayim in David Hashemori. We're saying it now twice a day. So so David says, were it not, lule means if it weren't for the fact, he manti ludus b'tuv Hashem, that I trusted that I would see the goodness of Hashem, be'eretz Chayim, in the land of the living, where the land of the living primarily means Gan Eden, and the tonim b'shmei de Rav Yosi, lomon nokud al lule. Why are there dots on the word lule? If you look in a printed tilim, or in a ksav yad of tilim, you'll find, you know, we know there's a number of places in Tanakh where you have dots on words. Here you have the letters of the word lule have dots. Actually, it's very interesting. If you look in Minchas Shai on the Pasuk, and if you look in Tanakhs that are printed accurately, there the word lule has dots not only on top, but also on bottom. It's unique. There's no other word in all of Tanakh that has dots on the bottom, you know, in I'll be Masorah. So the word lule literally means were it not. But it can also mean, yeah, it can also mean it's like an expression of uncertainty. So why are there dots on it? And in general, when we have dots, it means that it means like we're taking away some part of what it says over there. So it means, in other words, it's not a certain thing. So Oma David Lifnak Hodashbo, Hurabana Shlalam, move to Hani Bakashat Mashalam Sokhotev Latadikim Wasababa. I am certain, I do believe, Hamanti, that you are going to give a good reward to the Tadikim Wasababa. I will any a day and yeshli say the penang in lab. But I don't know whether I have a part among them or not. So that's why the lule has dots on it. Now, so Maharsha talks about in some detail over here. The usual rule is that, on the contrary, lule is really more of an expression of were it not. In other words, if it had been not, then not. But I'm certain that it is. You're saying if it weren't this way, but it is this way. So therefore, so if you have the dots over there, wouldn't that mean that on the contrary, you're saying that's something clear? So Maharsha explains that we're not doushening all of the dots on the word lule. What we're doushening primarily is the dots on the letters lamed aleph. They have four letters. They're lamed vav, lamed aleph. We're primarily doushening the dots on the lamed and the aleph. So therefore, that allows us to read it as if it said, loy he'emanti, I did not believe lirus v'tuv Hashem. I did not trust that lirus v'tuv Hashem, that I'm going to get to see the goodness of Hashem. In other words, I'm not certain whether I'm going to or not. So what is so how could David be calling himself a chassid then?
The definition of
chassid means somebody who acts with nim meshur sadin. And in fact, we learned in Nida not so long ago, we had the whole thing about the fingernails, where a chassid burns his fingernails rather than burying him, where we said a chassid is willing to accept a harm to himself rather than even the possibility of a harm to somebody else. So similar, we said before, for example, that David is dirtying his hands personally with the shvir and the shulia or whatever in order to help out women to be make them tahor for their husbands. So yeah.
The Rebbe says, what's the pasid? He talks on it a little bit, thinks more than that, and does the most in action.
Okay. Yeah. So the question is not, we know that David was a chassid, but how is he calling himself a chassid in the pasuk when in another pasuk he's saying, I'm not even certain that I deserve a place in Gan Eden? And the answer is, savar means that David figured, shema yigrem achet. He figures that after all, I might have done aveiras. I am a chassid, fine, but after all, what happens? I might eventually do an aveira, and that aveira would prevent me, liris v'tov Hashem v'eretz chaim. And that would be like what Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi says. The Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi Rami, he pointed out a contradiction between Pesukim when it comes to Yaakov. Hashem promises Yaakov, I'll be with you and I'll guard you wherever you go. But later on, when he's about to meet Esav, then Yaakov is very afraid. What's he afraid of if Hashem promised to protect him? So the same thing, means the same thing. Yaakov was also thinking, what if I've done an Avera, or what if in the future I might do an Avera, and therefore I might forfeit Hashem's protection. Now, Marsha has a long discussion about the point over here. First of all, Marsha says, don't we have the very next part, a couple of psukim later, where Yaakov himself says, that I've used up all my schusim. So why is he, so what kind of Shema Yigrim Achet? Maybe he's afraid that maybe he used up all his chusim on the various nisim that happened to him so far. So Marsha says, no, if that were the case, that still wouldn't be a reason for Hashem to revoke his promise to him. That might mean maybe he's not worthy of nisim in the future because he's used up all his chusim. But to have Ad Kedei Kach that Hashem would allow him to be destroyed by Esav when Hashem promised to guard him, that wouldn't happen. And then that brings Marsha into a long discussion over here, Bechlal. We have a concept that it says whenever Hashem promised something for good, then he never revokes it. When Hashem promises to a Navi something not good that's going to happen, then the people can do tshuva, or Hashem can be patient or whatever, like you have with Ninveh or whatever, and it can be revoked. But a good promise for good, there's only one time, there's one in Shabbos, that says it was something that Hashem told the Navi that he's going to spare the tzaddikim of Yerushalayim, and then he ended up deciding that they should be marked for death as well. But that's the only exception.
We just had a Rashi recently about that the same.
Yeah, we had an Parashat Shoftim over there by the Nevi'im, yeah.
That includes Hashem's promise in Mashiach, he has to deliver the God.
That is true. But anyway, so getting back to you, that's true. Anyway, so the point is, so what do you mean Shema Yigrim Achet? If Hashem promised Yaakov that he's going to protect him, how does Yaakov have any thought that might not happen? So Marashah discusses over here some details about it. The Rambam explains that there's a difference between a nevuah that Hashem says to a Navi to deliver to the Jewish people versus one that he says to the Navi person. The message that Hashem told Yaakov, l'shmartich b'chol shateilech, was not a message for anybody else's ears. It was given to Yaakov personally. So therefore, it might be Shema Yigrim Achet. When Hashem tells a promise explicit to a Navi explicitly, and it's meant to deliver to the Jewish people, then Hashem's not going to revoke it. And then Marsha goes into some detail over here that what we can mean is that if it's just they lost their schusim, then just chet alone wouldn't be a reason for Hashem to revoke a promise for good. But if there's chet plus the fact that they used up all their schusim, then maybe yes, which is in fact what happened in Yechezkel's times. Okay, so Kedetanya, where do we see this idea that chet can cause a promise of Hashem to be revoked? Kedetanya, we learn in a Braisa, when we say in Oz Yosher, Ad Yaver Am Hashem, Ad Yaver Am Zukanisa, until your people pass over Hashem, until the people that you took for yourself pass over. So why the double expression? Ad Yaver Am Hashem Zubir Rishoyna, that refers to the first time that they crossed the Yarden and come into Eretz Israel. Ad Yaver Am Zukanisa Zubir Shnia, that refers to the time when they cross over to come to Eretz Israel the second time around, in Ezra's times. So since the pasuk is putting them together, Mikan Omru Chachamim, based on this, the Chachamim are saying, the Jewish people should have been worthy that Nisim would be done for them in the times of Ezra, like were done in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, which means, Rashi says, in the times of Yeshua ben Nun, there no nation, no Goyish nation had to give them permission to enter Eretz Yisrael. They entered Biyad Chazaka. It should have been that way in Ezra's times as well. Instead, it wasn't. They needed permission from Kodesh, and afterwards they were subjugated to the various Persian kings after that. Why is that? El Shagorim Achet. Because the Chatoyim that they had done prevented that from happening. Rashi says it means the Chatoyim during the first space in Mikdash. Not Rashi over here. Rashi elsewhere says that the chet was that the chatoyim during the first space of Mikdash. There were other mafarshim who explain that it means even at the beginning of the second space of Mikdash. We know from the Pesukim in Ezra there was intermarriage. There were other problems over there. So therefore, the point is that we see that because of chet, then the implied promise over there in Ad Yavam Sukhanisa did not in fact come to pass. Nevertheless, like you were saying, ultimately a promise of Hashem has to come true, and it will come true. Loss of love. So the same thing, the promise of Mashiach, it's been deferred in Yismameh, Kakaloi, but it will happen, and it will happen, Hashem, when Hashem promises something, it's definitely going to happen.
This via that talks about crossing over, the same via as the Kashmir, yeah, the same word?
Well, it's the same word, it means coming in, yeah, yeah. Coming in. Okay, Yon Yem Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yom Tesevel. So the Rebbe talked about that how do we go out of Golos and how do we come into Yemos HaMashiach? So Chazal told us the expression from the Zohar that since the Jewish people are going to be able to taste from the tree of life, which is the Sefer HaZohar, with that, the Yipun Ben Golos HaBarachni, with that, they will leave Golos through Rach, with Rach. As Mashiach answered the Baal Shem did, that to your Chutzah minus Secha Chutzah, then Mashiach will come. Miyad Mamash. Continuing on halachas of mizuman, if you have 7 people who ate bread and 3 people who ate other things, fruit or drinks or whatever, where they need to make a bracha aharonah, then they can say the mizuman with Hashem's name. Now, unlike before, we were talking about if you want to join a third person to your mizuman, and we talked about the various poskim that discussed that they have to have eaten bread. Is it enough if they ate mizunas? Is it enough if they ate fruit? Here, everybody agrees that peiros or drink is enough. And it's a mitzvah to try and sort of find 10 to bench b'shem, but if you only have 6-8 bread, then you can't do zimun b'shem because you need a ruba de minker, you need a noticeable roi.